We're doing the Sefer HaMidot. We're up to page Tzadi Aleph, the 14th chapter. And in the previous chapter, he said that now he wants to explain what we say when we say Emet ve'yatziv ve'nachon ve'kayam. In the morning prayer, we say that this is true and it is yatziv. It is stable. It is firm. So he says now ve'yatziv be'uro al derech ha'ne'emar v'yasem be'edom netzivim b'chol edom sam netzivim. The word v'yatziv comes to mean, he gives a different explanation. Just like it says in the book of Samuel, that King David established representatives, firm representatives, throughout Edom, when he captured Edom, that's what the word v'yatziv comes to mean over here. And he'll explain. V'yorei ma'amar zeh, and this that we say, that it is yatziv, this is pointing al memshelet haTorah ve'avodah ve'hayirah b'nafshoteinu. We're discussing the fact that the Torah, the mitzvos, the service of Hashem, the davening, and the fear of Hashem have a certain dominion over our souls, k'viyateinu, our bodies, v'chol chemdateinu v'chefzeinu lo yishve neged haTorah. And everything we desire does not equal to the Torah. Meaning the Torah, so to speak, takes control. Kasher tirei, as you see, kama mitzvot, we have numerous mitzvot, asher asiyatam mikiyumam, that their performance, neged chepetz v'cheshek ha'adam, go in complete, they are completely antithetical to a person's desires, to what a person wishes for himself. Kamo, for example, mila, the circumcision. Comes the Torah, says a person has to slice off a piece of his body. It's not exactly what we think we'd want to do. Tell a person that when he has a baby, before the baby understands anything, you do this operation to the baby. Not so simple. It's not a mitzvah that comes naturally to a person. Ushvitat Shabbat, or resting on Shabbos. It's not natural to a person not to work on Shabbos. V'archaka me'arayot, or distancing oneself from the prohibited relationships, u'machalot asurot, or the prohibited foods, v'chadome la'elu, and other mitzvahs that are similar to these. Asher, that with regard to these mitzvot, that really contradict our desires, lulei heyotenu mitba'im aleihem mileidah mibeten, had they not been engraved in us, from the time of that we were born, umuchachim umlumadim me'avot labanim dor ledor, and something that's really been taught, something that's been instilled from generation to generation, v'tzidkat habanim tiyashar ma'agalam kefei hakabala mipi ha'avot ad hador harishon, and it's the righteousness of the sons that continue, they go on the straight path in accordance with their tradition from their forefathers going back to the first generation, asher agnehem amda al har Sinai, that generation that stood at Sinai, v'shamu advarim mipi Elokim chayim, and they heard it directly from the living God, Elyon v'norayit barach shemo, the one above who is awesome, may his name be blessed, lo haya be'efshar li'itapek u'linazrem kol eleh. We could not contain ourselves from all this. If not for the fact that it is instilled in us, if not for the fact that it's engraved in us, and something that so to speak, where it takes a certain righteousness to continue in its footsteps, but it also is, so to speak, it's in our DNA. It's there from the beginning. Now, this concept is what I mentioned earlier, that we could really speak about at length. The Talmud says that there are mitzvos that if a person is unaccustomed to them, then it's very difficult to get accustomed to them. The Talmud says it about a chozer b'tshuva, about a Jew who was promiscuous. So the Talmud says, if he does a complete tshuva, he could die doing that complete tshuva. The Talmud gives us a story about a person who was promiscuous. In the words of the Talmud, there wasn't a prostitute he hadn't visited, and he at one point he heard about one fantastic woman, and he did great feats to get to her, and she had everything set up in the most beautiful way, and as he was approaching her, she had a whole array of beds and gold and silks. And as he was approaching, she passed near. She was embarrassed. You know, that's not what she's supposed to do in her profession. You know, everything's supposed to be beautiful and great and wonderful. So she said a line. She said, just as I couldn't hold that in, so too there's no way you're getting into the world to come. And he took a step back. Here he was just compared to that. That's not too pleasant for him. And he said, goodbye. And he said, how do I do tshuva? And the Talmud describes that he went great lengths trying to figure out, how does he repent for a life like that? And the Talmud describes it in poetic terms. The Talmud said he asked the heavens, they said, we can't help you. He asked the earth, they can't help him. The seas, they can't help him. The Talmud says he tried everything until finally he realized there's no external force that's going to do it for me. He stood in between two mountains and started weeping bitterly. And in one moment, he wanted to change his whole life. And the Talmud says he meant it so badly that out of grief, he dropped dead. So the Talmud brings that as an example of someone who succeeded in doing tshuva for a lifetime like that. So he was pretty extreme on one side, but he made it all the way to the other side, to the point where a heavenly voice came out and said, praised are you, Rebbe, Elazar ben Tudai, I think was his name. You're going to make it to the world to come. And Rebbe, when he heard that, started weeping. He said, yesh kone olamo b'sha'a echad. Look at that. In a short amount of time, he purchased the world to come. Look at that. From heaven, they call him Rebbe. He got smicha. Pretty phenomenal. But the Talmud says that there are mitzvos that when a person has transgressed them, that to change them is going to be very difficult. The Talmud says it about a Jew who grew up one way, that to turn the other way is going to be very difficult. And the Talmud discusses it about a ger too. Talmud says that a ger has to be exceptionally careful because what the Talmud calls surora. It's like, you know, you guys ever play tennis? In tennis, everyone has their weak points. They know that their backhand is weak or their this is weak. A guy who knows his backhand is weak, if he's a righty, he sticks to the left of the court. So that he has more shots that he hits with his forehand than with his backhand. Because with his backhand, he knows he's not so good. So every person has that weakness. So surora means, so to speak, if you're caught in a situation where you have to give that backhand, you should know that the backhand isn't as strong as you'd like it to be. So a ger also has this weakness. What's the idea? We all have moments of strength and moments of weakness. We all have moments when we're more excited about Judaism and moments when we're even more excited about Judaism. Life is filled with ups and downs. The question is the down a bottomless pit? How far down can you go? So for a person, every person has what Rav Dessler likes to call their area. Rav Dessler describes it as... I don't remember. He coins a term. He describes that every person has their realm of challenge. Meaning, the average person when he walks down the street doesn't feel like murdering anyone, right? But an ex-murderer does. That the average person doesn't necessarily walk down the street and eye his friend's wallet and think, how could I pickpocket that? But someone who is a former pickpocket might. Every person has their frame, their realm of tests, of challenges. And what's a challenge for one person is not necessarily a challenge to another person. A person who lived his life without certain inhibitions, a person who lived what we might call a free life in Judaism, when we say chofshi is in modern Hebrew just means free. But really in Tanakh Hebrew, in our sages' terminology, chofshi means free from the yoke of heaven. That's why some people don't like singing the Hatikva, because the Hatikva describes that we want to be a free nation. And it uses the word chofshi. And the word chofshi traditionally means free from the responsibility of mitzvot. That's why there were many rabbis, even Zionistic rabbis, who opposed the wording of Hatikva, of the Hatikva song. At any rate, when a person lived that type of free life, if we might call it that, then afterwards it's much harder. And his frame of reference, the area in which he's challenged, is much broader. And the capacity to fool is much greater. On the one hand, we have to have understanding. That's what we're taught. That I shouldn't judge someone else because I don't have his challenges. I always say, when people are quick to judge the Prime Minister, I say, what were my challenges today? How many of them did I stand up to? So what's the difference between me and him? I didn't stand up to my challenges, and they happen to be in this area. He didn't stand up to his challenges, and they're in another area. Unfortunately, what he does affects more people than what I do. But at the end of the day, what's the big difference? Was I big enough to stand up to my challenges today? So the Magen Midubna over here is saying a very important line. He says that the fact that they are instilled in us and they're within our nature from the time we're born already, and we're taught them from the time we're children, and we ourselves maintain that honest continuum of the path of our forefathers, that's what gives us the capacity to keep up with all of this. And when we read this, we have to stand back and say, wait a second. So how does the Baal Tshuva do it? How does the Ger do it? And the answer is, with being a tremendous person. At the end of the day, what he's telling us is that the average Jew could not assume that he could stand up to the mitzvos if he didn't have these assets. And the Ger, or the Chozer B'tshuva, is doing something which we can't assume we'd stand up to this challenge. And that's the prism through which we should view a Ger or a Chozer B'tshuva. Because they're standing up to something that the Magid Midovna is saying, who told you you'd stand up to? I'm telling you, says the Magid Midovna, that had it not been for the fact that we have it from the time our parents were pregnant with us, and the time we were born, then it was instilled in us, and we're a continuation of a long line of people all the way back to Sinai, we wouldn't all stand up to it. We would not be able to all stand up to it. He says it wouldn't be possible. I don't think he means no one would stand up to it, but we understand what he means. Yeah? I just want to add one more point, if I may. You might ask, why am I telling you guys this? So first of all, because it's here. And secondly, because one of the points we have to know is to have patience for our fellow man. My experience is that the people who were most zealous against Geirim were Geirim themselves. I get the most complaints from Geirim about Geirim, and Chozrim B'Tshuva about Chozrim B'Tshuva. Meaning a person who stands up to so many things looks at other people and says, why don't they stand up to all these? So we shouldn't judge. What we see here is a perspective. The mere fact that a person is standing up to the general direction of things is so admirable, we have to just look how we could help a person and value a person for what they are doing. It's not our job to judge a person. That's God's job. Our job is to appreciate. And I'm sharing this with you, not so much because you guys have to hear it for yourselves, because each one of you is doing this. The only one in the classroom here, I think, who was, I don't know everyone's history here, but I'm the only one who actually was born in to the best of my knowledge, in a from home. I grew up from, you know, I had it easy. So I'm the one who should be learning this, not you guys. You guys know what it's talking about. But at the end of the day, at least when we look at our fellow men, we should have this appreciation of how he's standing up to something very, very hard. And we don't know one another's hardships. We don't know how many of us have different histories. Everyone has their challenge, and we don't know what that challenge is. We simply don't know. I could tell you frightening stories of people who walked through Machon Meir. I had people who I spoke to, I was scared of standing alone with them in the dark. You know, that's simple, you know. Person has a certain history and you just don't want to say the wrong word next to them. You hope the person did enough tshuva that your life isn't on the line if you say the wrong word, but you don't want to bank on that. And so on and so forth. You know, there are different, every person has their challenges, and we can't know. That's why Machon Meir doesn't have tests and we don't have grades, because how can you gauge? It's so individual. How do I know what each person's growing in? Hey, I don't know. You know, for one guy, it's about not talking Lashon Hara. For the next guy, it's about not stealing. For the third guy, it's about keeping Shabbos. For the fourth guy, it's about not killing. There was once a guy who told me that, by the time he was 12, he was beat up so many times that if he'd hear a car backfire, instinctively he'd fall to the ground because there's so many gunshots all around him. He got beat up so many times for being a Jew. He never walks around without at least brass knuckles and a knife. Go judge a person like that. That's not our job. That's God's job. So I remember he told me he can't go by a day without beating someone up because he's so used to being in fights. He comes to yeshiva. That's just second nature. That's the life he's used to. Took him a month to stop getting into fights with people. And when he meant fights, I mean, okay. But that's very admirable. So what are you going to say? Hey, you know, on Shabbos, you should use a kli shlishi with your cup of tea. I'm not sure that's what he has to hear right now. okay. he grew up in the United States. In the Machon, well, with the roommates and chavrusas and... I never got into a fight with him, thank God. No, the guy is tremendous. I'm not going to mock him, quite the contrary. I'm saying it's not his fault where he came from. That's a fact that was presented to him as life. And that's why we have to be careful not to judge other people, just to appreciate and give people their space. Yes?
No, I just heard that, that was something to comment. But when you said that it's not his fault where he comes from, the person needs to realize that he needs to change his actions depending on the environment he is.
That's why he came.
It's like a monkey in a jungle.
But that's why he came. But it takes time. Nothing changes in a day.
So if we talk about that, we are carved out with this from the bad time. So what happened with the Hebrews that got Torah and our Sinai? They were not born with this with Torah. With our Sinai was on that moment, not the Torah. So how can it be silly?
Deserves a long answer. In a nutshell, no, there's a very worthwhile answer that you would enjoy seeing. The Tiferes Yisrael has a short essay on the Mishnah we're going to learn tonight in Pirkei Avot, and you're invited to see it. He discusses that generation, the Tiferes Yisrael, the Yachinu Boaz. I happen to see it in preparing for tonight's learning. I'll show you which Mishnah. On the Mishnah, Chaviva Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem. How much does God love the human being, for he created him in his fashion? So he discusses there that it's not talking about a Jew, it's talking about Jew and Gentile alike. And then he says, wait a second. And he lists a whole slew of sources and logical proofs that Gentile is held in regard. He is also Tzelem Elokim. He is also a reflection of godliness in this world. And he goes on a page and a half proving that. And then he says, okay, so what's the difference between Jew and non-Jew? And then he goes into that whole generation of Sinai and what happened at Sinai. So look over there. It's a good question, but it's a long answer. So it's long for the class. It won't be long for you to learn. It's maybe five paragraphs. It's not a long thing. Okay, we'll pick up here next time, Ezra.